balloons hanging from the ceiling. Water balloons, it looked like, filled with some kind of dark liquid. She took a single step forward, and that was when it happened. Her ankle pressed into a wire tied across the room, triggering something to explode. One of her remaining window panes shattered, and a few items were knocked off her shelf, the balloons exploding at once. Dark red liquid rained down over her room, and her. She just stood there, shuddering, her attention fixed to the wall beside her head, where several tiny nails were embedded in the paint. And then she started hyperventilating. Her legs buckled, and she caught herself against the slippery floor, her chest squeezing and constricting. The door behind her opened, a soft curse sounding. "Jesus fucking Christ!" Killian appeared before her, his hands gripping her shoulders as he pulled her up. "Is that blood? Is any of this your blood?" She couldn't find the words to answer. He snatched something off her bookshelf and started wiping her with it, his movements lacking the usual care and softness he usually showed her. "Isabel!" She felt like she was choking.
"Fucking hell!"
He gave up trying to wipe her down, picking her up like she weighed nothing at all. He held her against his chest as he stepped back to the door, kicking his shoes off before moving into the hallway.
No!
She found her voice and started to struggle, pushing against his chest.
"Cameras!"
"We're invisible,"
he informed her, his tone cold. She stopped struggling, listening to her own ragged breathing.
"Are you hurt?"
he asked, moving toward the bathroom. There weren't any students in the hallway, but he whispered for the cameras. She tried to take stock of her body, but she just felt numb everywhere.
"I don't think so. You can put me down."
He ignored her, waiting by the wall until an Omega girl walked out of the bathroom, and then he caught the door with his foot, slipping inside. He carried her right into a shower room and locked the door before grabbing a towel and throwing it over the stool of a wing-backed armchair that stood apart from the shower and bath. He placed her on the towel and set a finger against her lips, asking her to keep quiet before he ducked into the tiled shower alcove, turning the water on full and filling the room with a comfortable hum of white noise. He came back to her, lowering close to her face.
"Don't move,"
he whispered before slipping out of the room. Isabel stared at the door, hoping the noise of the shower would be enough to stop anyone else from entering. When he returned, he had her toiletries bag, and he set it down before holding out a hand to her. She blinked at his hand, her mind flashing back to their kiss before she quickly shoved the memory from her mind. He was there to help. Maybe her feelings were a little confused. It was impossible not to be confused by someone who looked like Killian. But that didn't mean his feelings were confused. He was safe. She put her hand in his, letting him draw her silently up and into the shower, where steam curled around them. He didn't say anything as he angled her under the spray, his hands cupping her face, rubbing over her cheekbones as she scrunched her eyes closed and let him tilt her face to the water. When she came out of the spray for breath, he was examining her with so much care and intensity, it had her heart stuttering. He stepped out of the shower to rummage through her toiletries bag, and she found herself confronted with a very wet, very serious alpha as he returned. His face had tightened into hard lines, his jaw clenched, little lines furrowing around his pale eyes. He had only been wearing a stretched-out, faded terracotta tank and plain black pants, the thin polyester type with the drawstring. Basically, he wasn't wearing enough to hide any of the beautiful, streamlined muscles of his body. The wet material now clung to him like a second skin.
"Why are you so fit?"
she mumbled. It was too quiet, apparently, because he lifted an inquisitive brow, shampoo in one hand and conditioner in the other.
"Hmm?"
he asked lowly.
"What do you do for exercise?"
she whispered. He tipped her head back again and traced his fingers across her scalp, the focused look back on his face. He was looking for nails. She shuddered, and his eyes immediately snapped down to hers. His chest was so close to hers that she could feel it expand as he took a deep breath.
Dance, he admitted.
What? She blinked up at him. But...
privately.
He finished checking her scalp and bent to squeeze shampoo into his palm. No shit? Her lips tugged into a small frown, and his eyes dipped to follow the movement, fixing there as his chest expanded against hers again. He massaged the shampoo into her hair, moving slowly and treating her scalp like it was made of glass.
Not showing them everything is a tactic, he told her quietly,
his tone carrying a warning in such a subtle way that she wasn't even sure he was doing it deliberately.
You might not be on the icon track, but that doesn't mean the rest of us aren't playing the game.
She ducked her head down, but then started shaking again at the sight of the red-tinged water washing away from her feet. Her body locked up, and Killian caught her chin, gently lifting her gaze back to his.
Just focus on me.
His tone was hushed, his expression gentle.
It doesn't look like you have any cuts, but I'll double-check.
She stared at him as he washed her hair and kept staring as he unbuttoned her shirt, drawing it off her shoulders and leaving her in a plain black bra and shorts. He washed it clean before wringing it out and hanging it up on one of the towel racks. When he came back, his jaw was even tighter, his hands drifting carefully over her neck, shoulders, and arms. He only flicked his eyes back to hers once, right before his hand settled on her stomach. His fingers drifted first, fluttering over her skin like butterflies, searching for any wounds before he began to rub the blood away. It was awful, having him touch her. Awful because his hands on the outside seemed to be connected to something on the inside of her. Every brush and scrape from the pads of his fingers had her stomach clenching, weird, tingly feelings shooting through her from somewhere low in her belly. She was worried he could feel it, but his expression never changed. She hadn't experienced a lot of gentleness in her life, unless it was from her mother. Receiving it from Killian was like a drug, and it completely intoxicated her. "Is it a little weird that you're doing this?" she asked, just as he began those butterfly touches over her chest, tracing the skin above her bra and making the frantic organ inside her chest do somersaults. She was fascinated with the way her flesh dipped lightly beneath the drag of his touch. He paused, but only for a fraction of a second.
"Is Theo the only one allowed to be friends with you?"
"Theo doesn't shower me."
"His loss."
Killian's lips twitched, the first softening of his expression that she had seen since he appeared in her room. "Wait." She squinted at him, completely sidetracked. "Why were you in my room? How did you know I was getting released from the medical center?" He chewed on his lip, his hands dropping to grip her hips and spin her around. He took a few moments to answer while his fingers drifted over the backs of her shoulders. When he started to rub the blood off her skin, his fingers dug in a little harder, almost like a massage. She released a quiet groan and sagged back against him. His head dropped near hers, his voice changing until his whisper was a husky one.
"Feel good, baby?"
"Yeah." She closed her eyes, focusing on the way his fingers worked her muscles. "I used to get massages every week back home. My father said I couldn't afford any injuries because I wasn't allowed to skip practice."
"Your dad was intense."
His fingers slipped down from her shoulders.
"But it paid off. You dance like you were born for it. I'm going to touch your ass."
"Thanks for the warning."
She almost laughed. He sounded so serious.
But then he was pushing down her shorts, his hands gripping her waist as he lifted her up, kicked them away, and set her back down again. She didn't really feel like laughing anymore, especially when he skipped the butterfly touches, his palms dragging down the swell of her ass cheeks. The water must have already washed away enough of the blood for him to see that she wasn't injured, and she looked down at herself for the first time since he had told her to focus on him. The shower water was no longer running red, though her legs were still stained in some places. Her stomach clenched as he knelt behind her, firmly rubbing down her thighs and then her calves. He washed away all the blood and then stood, spinning her back around again, his eyes cataloging her skin for any specks he might have missed. She quickly wound her arms around his neck before she could second-guess herself, muttering into the skin of his collarbone. "Thank you." He caught her hips, holding her a few inches away, but when he realized she wasn't trying to plaster herself along the front of his body, he relaxed, his arms cocooning her and cuddling her chest close to his. He wasn't speaking, and that was a little weird for Killian. "You still haven't answered," she accused, realizing he had successfully distracted her from her question. She drew back to meet his guarded, yellow-green eyes. "Why did you come to my room?"
"We have connections inside the surveillance room. They told Kaelin you were being released."
"And he told you?" Killian rolled his lips together.
"Not exactly."
He reached around her, turned off the taps, and ducked his head close to her ear to whisper,
"I was spying."
He plucked one of the fluffy robes from the dressing area and then came back to wrap it around her.
"You can't stay in that room tonight."
"I know." She managed to conjure a smile. "I'll go and sleep in Eve's room." He looked down at her, that serious expression still holding his features hostage, a strange thump of emotion emanating off him and hitting against her own chest. She frowned, but just as she tried to focus on it, to figure out what it was, the darkness lifted from his expression, a familiar gentleness stepping into place even as his lips lifted at the corners, the curve of his mouth familiar and wily.
"I'd tell you to keep this a secret."
He kept his voice low.
"But it might do Theo some good to know he isn't your only alpha crush."
"I don't have a crush on you, you idiot," she scoffed, tightening the fluffy robe.
"But you do have a crush on Theo?"
His teasing tone remained the same, but his eyes were sharp enough to cut through steel, and she wasn't used to that from Killian.
Was he jealous?
Did he like Theodore? "We're friends." She hunted down a pair of the plush slippers that were always provided in the dressing area.
"You're broken records, that's what you are."
Killian caught the neck of her robe, pulling her up and forcing her to look at him.
"Are you okay? I don't feel right leaving you."
"Remember that discussion we had where we agreed you aren't my dad?"
"Was this after I folded your underwear, brushed your hair, or bathed you?"
Isabel bit down hard on her lip so that she wouldn't burst into laughter. But a loud sound escaped her anyway, and they both paused, heads cocked, as they tried to listen through the door of her shower room.
"I need to follow you out,"
he whispered, returning his attention to her.
"Just promise you'll text me or Theo if anything else happens."
"Okay." It was a lie, and they both knew it. Chapter 3. Take Me Back. Isabel returned to her room after Killian left. She retrieved her black folder and bag, both now covered in blood, and searched for clothes on her shelf that had managed to evade the deluge from the ceiling. After quickly changing and switching the items from her bag into the only clean tote she could find, she left the dorm. It was almost midnight, and the pathways were quiet, only a few lights on near the fitness center. She walked to the library, swiped her access card, and climbed to the top floor, her posture stiff with tension. Her neck had prickled the entire way there, the hair on her arms standing on end, but no matter how many times she turned around, nobody was ever following her. The uneasy feeling didn't leave her until she slipped into the chair behind her desk. She cleaned the folder as best she could before flipping it open, scanning through the first page. It was a schedule for her final week of the term, saying that she had been excused from classes until Friday, when spring break started, though her dance sessions in the practice rooms remained. Not only that, but private lessons had been added. There was one on Wednesday with Kaylin West. Private piano tutoring. She sat back, staring at the little block of time, her brows shooting up, her mouth parting in shock. An alpha professor had agreed to privately tutor a sigma? She wasn't even in her third year yet. Teague must have pulled some serious strings, and Isabel wished she hadn't. Not only was West terrifying, but she also had no interest in the icon track. She wasn't in this game to win it. She needed popularity points before the summer break, and private lessons were rarely filmed, at least until the officials decided to send out crews on foot. Private lessons were for people on the icon track to work with their mentors on special projects that they would only debut to the public when they were ready. She had absolutely no use for private lessons with West. The other new addition was a small group session that had replaced her second period time slot, but it didn't list the professor or the subject, only the location. On the next page was a note from Teak explaining the timetable changes. Miss Carter, I've managed to clear your schedule for the last week of term to give you some time to acclimate to your newly half-bonded status. There are a few exceptions, namely the private lessons with Professor West and the small group session. After being informed of your deal with the officials to move to Dorm A with a provisional amount of popularity points, of which I'm sure you will accumulate, I tracked down the Alpha professors and asked them to consider adding you to their private tutoring schedule. It was more of a formality to make sure you were on their radar, since I believe you will be living there next year. To my surprise, Professor West agreed. This is a rare opportunity, as I'm sure you understand, and a very big vote of confidence from the Alphas. If they welcome you into their fold, it goes without saying that you will benefit immensely. I fear the other ranks may begin to target you soon for the attention you are receiving as a Sigma at Ironside. Isabel snorted, rubbing her eyes as she dropped the folder. Teak had no idea. She shrugged off the deflated feeling before it could settle over her shoulders, pushing her chair back and turning off the lights on the upper level. She returned to her desk in the dark and crawled beneath it. It was dusty. It was cramped. It was safe. When she woke up, it was with a gasp in her throat and the memory of blood flooding down over her face. But it wasn't the red-soaked room that she saw. It was a tall boy, sitting up against the wall behind her chair. His head tipped back, his eyes closed. She blinked the bleariness from her eyes, but barely dared to move as she stared at Theodore. There was a takeaway cup of coffee by his thigh, and she dragged her eyes over the black pants that somehow managed to show how muscled and firm his thighs were to the second cup in his hands, tilting dangerously. His long, dark lashes dusted his sharp cheeks, the harsh lines and angles of his face somehow still tight, full of tension, even while he slept. She carefully pulled herself up, but as soon as she shifted near him, reaching out to save the tipping coffee cup, his eyes flicked open, immediately focused, his pupils expanding and contracting.
Illy.
His voice was husky. He set his cup down and stretched his limbs, something cracking as he winced. And then he handed her the other cup. How did you find me here? She asked, sipping the still warm liquid. As soon as the bitterness hit the back of her tongue, she started to drink it faster, greedy to consume it all before it lost its heat.
"Christ, I needed this," she groaned.
"Thanks." He watched her, the elegant, arched shape of his brows pitching down.
"You aren't that hard to find. Why were you under the desk?"
"I had a little incident in Dorm O." She took another few gulps of coffee and then tried to change the subject.
"You don't look very happy to see me."
His face softened instantly. One of his arms held out like he wanted a hug.
"I am. Sorry I didn't come to see you in the hospital."
"It's okay." She knee-walked over to him and then awkwardly bent into the hug. He had been texting her every day, but he never actually explained why he wasn't coming to see her. She just assumed it was the same reason he got himself a fake girlfriend. To deflect attention. He patted her back as she leaned over him, and she could feel him inhaling at the same time as her, both of them holding their breath. But then he suddenly stood, drawing her up with him. She yelped, holding her cup with one hand and grabbing a handful of his shirt with the other. He chuckled, setting her down before he swiped up her tote.
"As much as I like you clinging to me, we're late for our group session," he said, looking her over.
His expression slipped for just a moment, showing a brief flash of darkness in his stormy eyes.
"What happened?"
"What group session?" She tried to ignore his question, stepping back to her desk to snatch up the black folder with her new schedule inside.
"Private small group session," he replied, eyeing her folder. "We all have one for second period. You've just been invited to the club."
"We?" she asked as he pulled her toward the stairs.
"What club?" "The other elf."
She dug her heels in, pulling them both up short. He looked her over again, his brows drawing low.
"It's okay. They won't do anything to you."
"They don't want me in their club,"
she insisted, her words almost hissing out between clenched teeth.
"Who doesn't want you?"
His lips were twisting into a grin, but he managed to fight it back.
"Me? Killian?"
"Moses," she added tonelessly, folding her arms. "Ashford, Nico, Spade, Reed, Sato, all the rest of them?" Theodore blew out a sharp breath, waving his hand.
"Never heard of him. Gabriel got you those contacts, didn't he?"
Theodore managed to get her walking toward the stairs again.
"And Elijah set up the sensor on your door."
"Wait, what? Reed put a sensor on my door? What does that even mean?" She halted once more, whipping around to face Theodore, who quickly turned his attention to his watch.
"We're going to be really late."
His cheeks were tinged with the slightest hint of color.
"What sensor?"
She folded her arms.
"He thought the camera might not be enough."
Theodore shrugged lightly, but there was caution in the way he returned her stare.
"He set up a sensor to bring the camera feed up on his phone whenever someone uses your door. That's why Killian was on his way to your room. He was going to take down the blood trap before you got there. None of us were expecting you to be released last night."
"Killian didn't tell me that."
"We weren't supposed to tell you that."
"Did they see who set the trap?"
"No."
The word was almost growled out.
"Someone flooded the room with darkness, and then they covered the camera while they set it up. Elijah waited until he had visibility again to tell us what had happened, since you were already safe in the hospital."
She was reeling, but Theodore had given up trying to gently coax her into movement. His bigger hand wrapped around hers, and he practically dragged her down the steps and out of the library, muttering something about her thanking him later when she didn't get punished for being late. She was silent as they walked to class, his hand releasing hers as soon as they were outside, though his arm landed over her shoulders instead, maintaining his fast pace as he steered her. Halfway there, he seemed to remember that he had brought her a protein bar, and he switched it out for her empty coffee cup, which he dropped into a bin outside the fitness center before pulling her toward the entrance.
"Eat quickly," he encouraged. "Mickey won't go easy on you."
"Professor Easton?"
she spluttered, choking on the first mouthful she had hastily bitten off.
"That's right."
Theodore gave her a droll look.
Our group session is your new second period. You want to live with the alphas? You're going to need to learn to keep up with us.
I'm never going to be able to keep up, she grumbled beneath her breath, tearing into the protein bar to ease her nerves. It tasted terrible. It was one of the health bars, not the full-of-sugar-and-pretending-to-be-healthy bars that she preferred. It made sense that Theodore would choose the nutritious option, though, with muscles like his.
Why is the group session in here? She glanced down the hall.
Mickey does things a little differently,
he answered, leading her through the center toward the gym rooms. She stared at the back of his tousled dark head, wondering if those heavy words had been a promise or a warning. The protein bar inside her mouth turned to ash, and she quickly tossed the rest of it out right before Theodore paused before a door, knocking three times. It opened to Easton's annoyed face as he checked his watch.
2 minutes late, he growled, all traces of the forced politeness in his scarred features vanishing.
He stepped back, waving Theodore through, and then settled his splotchy black eyes on her, quirking a brow with a scar cutting through it.
Rough night, Carter?
Did they all know? She squared her shoulders, edging past him into the room. No, Professor. Good morning.
Here.
He dangled a bag before her face.
I didn't think you'd be prepared, and I don't like to waste time. There's a bathroom behind the treadmills. Get changed quickly.
Her hands were shaking when she took the bag from him, careful not to accidentally touch his fingers when she slipped hers through the handle. He stepped back, pointing to a door at the back of the room. It was a full gym with a large stretching area, at least 5 treadmills, and 2 walls of mirrors. And it looked like every single one of the alphas were already there, except Professor West. They were stretching, Theodore chatting with Killian while he kept his eyes on her. She felt the others looking at her, too, assessing, wary, watchful. They weren't sure about inviting her into their group, but they were opening the door a crack, which meant they thought she was going to succeed in getting a room in their dorm. It didn't mean they were accepting her, but they were taking the possibility seriously. She didn't know whether to be flattered at their confidence in her growing popularity or terrified by their careful planning. She ducked her head and hurried to the bathroom, trying not to trip over any of the equipment in her nervous haste. The Omegas didn't scare her half as much as the Alphas, but the Alphas were the only ones, other than Eve, who were making any small effort to somewhat include her. They weren't rigging her room with nail bombs and water balloons filled with blood. But they were asking her to what? Be better? To not embarrass them? She shook out the contents of the bag Easton had given her, blinking at the brand new gym shorts, sports bra, and loose shirt. There were also socks and sneakers, and she changed as quickly as she could, frowning over at herself in the mirror as she quickly slung her hair into a ponytail. Everything fit perfectly, right down to her shoe and bra size. It was unsettling. Had he asked Theodore? Had he looked up her official records? Was her bra size in her official records? Almost definitely. Had he done this because he knew her clothes had been soaked in blood? No matter how she looked at it, it was disturbing. As soon as she entered the gym, she was hit with a wall of sound. Nico, Theodore, Killian, Spade, and Reed were running on the treadmills. No, sprinting. Nico, who was closest to her, darted a quick look at her as she walked past. His striking eyes blank, the meld of hazel and green, cold, wiped of emotion. He had his wavy, bleached hair pulled into a bun, but most of it had escaped to bounce against his forehead, covering his eyes when he turned away from her. A light sheen of sweat already covered his caramel skin, his breath loud. Everything was loud. Ashford, Sato, and Moses were lined up in a row before one of the mirrored walls,
rhythmically punching teardrop boxing bags hanging from the ceiling.
I'm grateful to be invited, but what kind of lesson is this?
She asked, meeting Easton in the middle of the room. He was looking at her outfit, his dark frown refusing to loosen until he seemed to find the hem of her shorts, barely peeking beneath her shirt. His forehead smoothed out slightly, and he crossed his arms, rocking back on his heels. Maybe the shirt was too big. It did kind of look like she wasn't wearing any pants. She tucked part of the shirt into her shorts to make it more obvious.
For you, it's a singing lesson, he told her.
She wasn't sure if she was supposed to laugh or not.
Nico, he barked. Move to a bag.
Nico jumped off the treadmill, giving her another blank look as he crossed to the boxing bags, picking up a set of gloves and falling into the other workout without batting an eyelid.
Jump on,
Easton offered, waving at the freed-up treadmill. She swallowed, stepping toward the machine. Spade didn't break stride beside her as she stepped up, and Easton immediately started pressing buttons.
This is a warm-up, he told her. The aim isn't to kill yourself. Tell me when to stop.
Suddenly, her legs were kicked into a jog, and then a run.
Stop,
she begged, as she felt the strain of maintaining the speed he had set. He switched it down a level before walking away. She tried not to stare at the others in the mirror as they ran in silence, Killian occasionally muttering to Theodore, Spade ignoring everyone as he blasted music through his headphones. When her machine hit the 10-minute mark, Easton called for them all to stop and stretch, and she followed the others to the mat-strewn section of the room, drawn to the sunshine grin Theodore shot at her. Something in her gut was pulled by the gesture, guiding her to his side as she copied the stretches he was doing. Every time he shifted and she mirrored him, his smile grew a little more amused.
Right, Easton stood over them, looking through his phone. Feeling loose? Feeling warm? Loose as I get,
Sato grunted, jumping up and down on the spot like he was prepping to pounce on somebody.
Also warm as he gets,
Reed added, making a few of them chuckle.
Can you sing, Isabel?
Easton's sudden question, and all the attention that swung her way, had her frozen to the spot. She really thought he was being sarcastic about the singing lesson.
No.
Yes. Sort of. Not well.
If you could only pick one?
He was still staring at his phone, the inflection in his voice a bit impatient.
Not well, Professor.
He slipped his phone away, his arms crossed.
You're at the most expensive arts academy in the world, and on the most famous reality or talent show in the world. Not to mention, you're Bron Carter's daughter. So, I find that hard to believe. Even as the daughter of an icon, they wouldn't have let you take a fucking picture of this place unless they were impressed with what you could do. Show me. Sing something.
Her mind immediately flashed back to her first year, to the professor who had forced her to sit at the piano and play for the class, and how her fingers had refused to move. The students had dismissed her as a lost cause almost immediately, and she couldn't afford to repeat that mistake with the Alphas. Dorm A was her only escape. If they thought she would embarrass them, they might find a way to refuse her entry. She registered the impatient look on Easton's face and quickly grappled for the first song she could think of, opening her mouth to begin it, but his head was already shaking.
No, no. Stand up.
Blushing, she pushed to her feet and moved between Theodore and Moses to stand before Easton, right at the point on the floor he had indicated. When he seemed satisfied, she began. Her voice cracked immediately, but she closed her eyes and blocked them all out, determined to finish before she froze up. It was an old settlement song her mother used to sing, and she started to think about her mother's soft voice as the words passed naturally across her lips. She relaxed, seeing her mother leaning over the bathtub, testing the water, boiling the kettle, mixing something on the stove, watering the ferns around the apartment, standing on the balcony at night,
her silken robe flapping as she stared down, down, down. Take me back to where it all began, seas of sand and sun-kissed land. Take me home before I'm buried here. Show me the spot where the sun falls, somewhere far beyond these walls. Take my hand, be my guide, to the light on the other side. Through this maze, we'll find our way. Before these walls, claim my last day.
She snapped her eyes open mid-chorus, her fists clenched by her sides, her chest rising and falling quickly, a hint of panic at the edge of her mind.
Maybe she needed to talk to someone about her mother. Maybe that someone was her father.
She sucked in a shuddering breath, turning her eyes up to Easton's.
I forgot the rest, she lied. Sorry. He didn't look annoyed anymore. He looked almost surprised, but his brow was also furrowed.
Never mind.
He stared at her for a few more seconds, cataloging her features. It was the first time he had really looked at her.
You're clearly very comfortable in your mezzo range. Your voice is lyrical and airy. You didn't push your range at all. You must have started singing young.
As young as possible.
She was shocked with the compliments.
You need to work on your stability, though.
Easton pulled out his phone again and started up a song over the speakers before handing the phone over to her.
Pick a song from this playlist, and we'll use that as our base today. Something with a lower register. I want to experiment with your range.
He turned away from her and began firing off orders to the others. The song playing over the speakers had been recorded by Theodore, his clear, hypnotizing voice ringing about the room. But it seemed to be a demo track, and each of them knew their parts. They were all practicing this song, even Sato and Moses, who were the last people she had expected to see singing. She couldn't distinguish their voices very well in the loudness of the room and quickly stopped trying when Easton shot her a sharp look. She returned her attention to his phone screen just as a message appeared across the top of it. Tilda.
It's no surprise, but you forgot to call this morning. Can you do anything right? Isabel winced, trying to ignore the message as she scanned the list of songs, settling on the first familiar name she saw.
She quickly turned off his screen, but his phone vibrated again, making something flip sickeningly in her chest. When he returned, she quickly handed the phone back, the vibrations threatening to burn her palm.
"Billie Eilish, Ilo Milo," she quickly said, hoping to stop him from looking at his phone. "I'll search the lyrics."
She already had her phone in her hand, her fingers flying across the screen.
"Good choice."
He watched her search for the song and then brought a stand over for her to rest her phone on. He had her sing it through once, somehow able to block out all the other noise in the room as he focused solely on her. The other alphas had divided up into pairs, a line of them standing up against the wall and singing different parts of their demo song on repeat over the loudspeaker. The others put on boxing gloves and faced off against one of the boys against the wall. And then they started punching, sending light but fast jabs into their partner's abdomen. Isabel started, stepping away from the podium, but Easton dragged her back, tapping on the podium for her to focus.
"Don't worry, that won't be part of your vocal training."
He had a small, tight smile on his face. "Why are they doing that?" she asked, wide-eyed as Theodore took a particularly nasty punch from Sato.
"Alphas are..."
Easton trailed off, cutting a glance over to them.
"Different,"
he finished.
"We have a side that only comes out when triggered by adrenaline. That's the side I need them to tap into when they're performing. You have other talents."
"You want me to make everyone calm when I perform?"
she asked. For just a moment, he almost looked amused, but it also might have been exasperation.
"Your voice has an ethereal quality. That's what I want you to tap into. It's the opposite of what they're doing." Another compliment? Last week she never would have believed this scene. Her training with the Alphas, being complimented on her talent by Mikkel Easton. This was not the Ironside she was used to.
Sing it through again, Easton ordered. But this time, try to breathe more through your diaphragm.
His hand tapped against her chest.
I can see you breathing from here. It should be here.
His hand dropped to her stomach, flattening there.
Your tutors should have taught you that.
She swallowed, blinking at her phone screen. With him so close, she could discern his scent, like cedar leaves crushed beneath a storm, like lightning striking too close and rain falling too heavy. He still hadn't moved his hand. Why did they all have such distinct scents? Easton's was probably the oddest one she had encountered.
Sing, he prompted. When you breathe, I need to feel you pushing against my hand. Direct your breath here.
She remembered these lessons. He was right. Her tutors had taught her this. It should have been second nature to her, but she hadn't had lessons in some time, and it was easy to forget all the technicalities. Her voice was a little wobbly when she restarted the song, too much of her focus on the man beside her. It was strange to be touched in such a clinical manner. But nothing was as strange as when she lifted her eyes from the lyrics and found that Sato had turned around and was staring at them, pulling his gloves off with his teeth, his glittering dark eyes narrowing. Theodore lifted away from the wall, also glancing over, reaching beneath his shirt to rub at his abused muscles before his focus narrowed in on the hand against her stomach. He caught the gloves Sato tossed at him and didn't look away until the last minute, sending a vicious punch straight into Sato's gut. The other Alpha grunted and then laughed, pulling up his shirt to reveal clean, defined ridges of sinew and muscle. He sneered something at Theodore, something that looked like, "Do better," but Theodore backed off, shaking his head and then shaking out his arms, returning with a more measured jab.
Carter,
Easton snapped. Her eyes snapped up to his, touching on his hard, downturned lips. She trailed off, falling silent.
Try again.
He lightly tapped her stomach.
You aren't making me feel it.
She started again, and he pulled out his phone with his free hand. The screen was already lit up, so it must have been vibrating in his pocket for a while. His frown darkened as he glanced at it, and the fingers against her stomach flexed, the movement seeming unconscious. He had a big hand, and one of his fingers was digging into the dip of her waist, almost pinching painfully as he stared at his phone, but she kept singing, kept trying to breathe through her diaphragm, kept pretending she didn't notice all the tension. Eventually, he seemed to realize, and he dropped his phone back into his pocket, easing his hand away from her. She tried not to stare at it, hanging by his side, clenching and unclenching.
Relax your face,
he growled, his voice rough and grating. There was a strong emotion pressing into her chest, emanating pain of some kind. He felt wrong suddenly, like something had shifted inside him, flicking a switch somewhere in his body and mind. His eyes were detached, his body tense.
There's too much tension here.
He tapped her jaw, very light and gentle compared to the violence that seemed to suddenly curl beneath his skin. I can't help it, she broke off, sighing out a frustrated sound. I'm a Sigma. I'm feeling what you're feeling. It took him a second to understand, and then he looked down at the ground, hiding his unnerving eyes behind a fan of dark lashes. His broad shoulders rolled back, and when he looked up again, the pressure against her chest had eased. His expression had smoothed out. His fingers were lax by his side.
Again, he said calmly.
Chapter 4 Yes, Father.
Isabel stood at the entrance to her room, a sigh depleting some of the rigidity from her posture. She had planned to still attend her other classes until the end of the term, despite Teek's permission to skip them. But then she had overslept in the library that morning, missing first period, and now she was faced with a blood-soaked room that would likely take her the rest of the day to clean. She was grateful the dorm was empty, at least. The Alphas might have had the run of the academy. People like Sato, Reed, and Spade were able to drift in and out of classes at will. But there was no way the Omegas would be able to get away with that. After setting her bag aside from the mess, she left the room to hunt down one of the dorm supervisors. Finding Professor Yarrow at her usual desk, she explained that she needed cleaning supplies and new bedding. Yarrow looked like she might question why, but then she just shook her head and reached for a phone to call one of the cleaners. A few hours later, she had hauled all her stained belongings to the laundry on the lower level and sorted through everything else, throwing away what was unsalvageable and writing out a list of what she needed to replace. She only had one term to go before she would be a third year, and then she would be able to access the shops on Market Street. Putting up with a limited wardrobe until then seemed like a preferable option to contacting her father and asking him to bring her new clothes. Hell, having no clothes at all would have been preferable. It was almost dinner time when she finally emerged from her room, dragging buckets and trash bags behind her. Yarrow appeared at the other end of the hallway, looking far more frazzled than she had when Isabel had inferred that her room had been trashed again. She dodged the other students, her eyes locked onto Isabel.
Carter!
She was wringing her hands.
The officials have summoned you to the family center. You need to go there immediately.
Isabel's hands turned numb, the mop falling out from where it had been cinched between her arm and her side.
Leave all of this here.
Yarrow started trying to wrestle one of the buckets off her. Isabel released it, setting everything else down.
I need to shower,
she said dumbly. She looked terrible. She had stains all over her knees and elbows from scrubbing the congealed red mess from the floors.
No time for that. Hurry now.
Yarrow gave her a little push toward the staircase, but she ducked back into her room and grabbed her phone before stepping out. It was getting dark outside, but there were still a lot of students around. The dinner rush was starting, and she had to weave around so many groups of Omegas that she didn't notice the large, lumbering form that was following a few steps behind her until a second form emerged, like a shadow snapping into place beside her.
Fuck off!
The snarled order was delivered in a gravelly alpha voice, forcing the huge beta in her peripheral to stop in his tracks, and Isabel to turn in shock, watching, wide-eyed, as Crow lumbered away, glaring at her over his shoulder. Sato remained, looming over her.
What could have you so distracted that you don't even notice Frankenstein's monster stalking you halfway across campus?
You've been following me that long?
She turned and strode away before he could retaliate, because she was a coward.
Longer.
He fell into step beside her again.
Elijah is forwarding his fucking door sensor alerts to me, and you've been in and out all day. At some point, I lost my mind and decided to come and demand an explanation.
Why?
She didn't even break stride, and she was quite proud of that. But then again, she was a little distracted.
Had they found her mate? Was it happening?
She had been gifted with more time to prepare than anyone else usually got, but it still wasn't enough. It would never be enough.
Why demand an explanation, or why is Elijah forwarding the alerts to me? You look great, by the way. Very murdery. The bloodstains are a nice touch.
Sato was remarkably talkative, for once. It didn't seem like a good sign.
Both.
Students were now actively scattering out of her way, making her progress that much faster. They took one look at Sato and scurried away like mice into crevices, pretending like they were never there in the first place, hoping he didn't remember their faces.
Elijah's a sadistic bastard. I respect that about him.
He didn't seem inclined to explain further. His dark eyes fixed to the path ahead, his cold expression trapping unsuspecting students as they accidentally made eye contact before all the color drained from their skin. More than one of them turned around and headed in the opposite direction, acting like they suddenly realized that they left something important back in their dorm. Sato didn't have the best reputation, but there was no solid evidence as to why. It was like he broadcast exactly what violence he was capable of, without ever acting it out or spelling it out. People just knew. She swallowed, shooting him a sideways look.
What do you want?
You still owe me a favor,
he smoothly inserted, his gravelly voice low.
Ashford's birthday party was rescheduled for this Sunday. Wallace will be there.
She slowed a little, looking at him a little more carefully. He had asked her to steal Theodore's fake girlfriend's phone, but Isabel still didn't know why. Then again, it didn't really matter why.
Okay, she breathed out a sigh. Is that all?
He looked like he was amused, though she wasn't sure how she could tell. The cold expression on his face barely shifted, only the slightest twitch of his mouth giving anything away.
That's all, Carter.
She glanced at him a few more times as he walked with her, his strides easy and measured beside her more hurried movements. He wasn't breaking away or going about his business, but it didn't occur to her that he was actually deliberately escorting her until they reached the front of the family center and he stopped at the base of the stairs, watching her approach the door. She turned in the doorway, frowning down at him.
Is this about Crow?
This?
He plastered on an expression of confusion that didn't even look like he was trying to mimic the confusion of a normal, non-sociopathic person. His hands disappeared into his pockets as he rocked back on his heels, the wind teasing mahogany and oak curls against dark bronze skin. With the sun threatening to set in the background behind him, he almost looked handsome instead of terrifying, if she squinted. His scars disappeared into shadow, his emotionless eyes warmed with the golden hue of dusk, and his hard slash of a mouth softened with her imagination.
Is that why you're following me? Why you came to the dorm?
Her hand tightened around the door handle as she tilted her head at him.
Maybe.
He shrugged, his expression uncaring.
Maybe I should have killed him when I had the chance. Maybe I'm waiting for another chance. Maybe I thought he would give me a chance just now.
Her hand shook against the warm metal, her brows jumping up.
You shouldn't joke about that.
You're right.
He smiled. It was terrifying, no matter how much she squinted.
That's why I never joke.
Okay.
She twisted the handle, unsure what else to say. Just don't do anything. I can handle Crow. He narrowed his eyes at her, the darkness of his expression tunneling into her throat and forming a stiff ball of tension that was hard to swallow around. He didn't say anything, but that look seemed to scream louder than anything.
See you around, rabbit.
He turned on his heel, leaving her in the doorway, unease settling so deeply into her limbs that for a good few minutes, she completely forgot all about why she was there. After watching Sato disappear back the way he had come, she finally pushed open the door and stepped inside, scanning the empty waiting room until her gaze landed on a bulky body sitting at one of the small meeting tables up against a window. The setting sun slanted across his broad shoulders, illuminating the way he stiffened slightly, his head turning a few inches to the left, giving her a glimpse of his side profile.
Father?
She was rooted to the spot, the door falling slowly closed behind her.
Isabel.
He still hadn't turned fully.
Take a seat.
She couldn't move.
Her feet wouldn't work. Or, at least, that was what she thought, until his chair began to scrape against the ground, and then suddenly she was jerked forward by adrenaline alone, her heart leaping up into her throat as she hurried to obey. She took a seat across from him, her hands folded in her lap, her eyes downcast.
"You haven't been responding to my emails."
He settled back into his chair, tapping the cell phone sitting on the table before him. "I was in the hospital."
"And you didn't think I should know about that?"
He snatched up his phone, tucking it away before reaching over the table and pinching her chin.
"Hmm?"
She no longer had his eyes. Why that thought occurred to her in that moment, she had no idea, but it settled her. His attention flicked between her irises, a strong brow quirking. "I thought you had been notified." She eased out between stiff lips. He was pinching her chin too hard for her to comfortably talk. He squeezed harder, his anger battering her.
"Why do you have to ruin everything?"
he seethed, his sharp words accompanied by a bolt of pain that traveled through the lower half of her face. Any harder, and he would crack her jaw.
"This is the only thing that could have possibly made you half as interesting as the Alphas. We could have capitalized on this. We should have involved my publicist and my agent at the minimum. Instead, we're playing fucking catch-up."
"Pack it away." Her mother's voice floated across her consciousness, and then, suddenly, it wasn't just her voice. Her mother was sitting right there, across the table from her, beside her father. She was wearing a silk robe, her hair loose about her shoulders, her expression despairing. "Pack it away." Her mother reached out like she would take Isabel's hand. "Remember what I taught you. When he's in a mood like that, take all the things you want to say and put them in a box until only obedience remains. Just say what he wants to hear." Isabel flicked her eyes between her father and mother. But her father was still glaring at her, pinching her chin to the point of bruising. He couldn't hear the woman beside him. He didn't know she was there.
"Yes, father."
She forced the words out, her hand inching across the table to where her mother's hands were. If she could just touch her. Just once. Her father released her chin with a disgusted sound, sending her jolting back into her chair with the force of it. Her fingers barely managed to brush those of her mother on the table, but there was no substance to them. Her touch passed right through, like her mother was made of air. She curled over in her chair, hugging her midsection, the tips of her fingers pricking with a strange kind of awareness.
"I should have known better than to give you the freedom to manage yourself at Ironside,"
he announced, folding thick arms and regarding her with eyes weighed down by disappointment.
"They've allowed me to move into one of the units upstairs thanks to your unique situation. I expect you to report to me every afternoon for 1 hour. During that time, you will keep me appraised of all new developments, and we will strategize with your new PR team. Is that clear?"
She chewed on her tongue, staring at the seat beside him. Her mother was just sitting there, looking back. There was a small, sad smile tugging at her lips, and a heaviness in her eyes.
"Is this really happening?"
Isabel asked quietly, directing the question to her mother, and hoping it would pass as a response to her father's lecture.
"Yes,"
her mother whispered, just as her father barked out his response.
"You better stop wasting the opportunity I've given you here at Ironside. You're here to represent me, not to fuck around and embarrass me. Do you understand?"
"Yes, father."
Her mother dissipated, like evaporating steam, like a dream Isabel had tried to hold on to despite it slipping further and further from her consciousness. She turned her attention back to her father.
"Good. We'll start with our promotional activities in the settlements.
We'll have a photo shoot in my apartment tomorrow afternoon for the settlement posters and take it from there.
What settlement posters? She asked warily.
Your mate finder campaign.
He answered dismissively, already standing from his seat.
We'll be doing a tour of the settlements over the break. We want crowds when we arrive. Men and women begging to be your mate. Begging for a second of your time. A reverse Cinderella. Except you're the shoe and they're all hoping to fit you. I've already suggested to the officials that they should send a crew with us to get it all on camera, and they're seriously considering it. Be here at 5 p.m. tomorrow. I've already changed your schedule to accommodate our meetings.
He strode away, without looking back, hitting the button for the elevator that would take him to the upper levels of the family center. She watched as he got inside and the doors closed on his impassive face. He moved with the confidence of a man sure of his position at the top of the ladder. He wasn't just a revered alpha. He was also a recognized citizen, with all the rights of a regular human. He had the best of both worlds. And he had her right where he wanted her. Right back under his complete control. Resisting the urge to break something, she stalked out of the family center, skipping dinner to go straight to the training rooms. She searched for a free room before kicking off her shoes and hooking up her phone, scrolling through for a song that made her blood pound and her ears hurt. She shrugged off the oversized shirt Easton had bought her, pacing before the mirrored wall in her exercise shorts and sports bra. When she finally faced herself, she tried to see herself as her father had. She wasn't the same girl he had dropped off down the bottom of the mountain a couple of years ago, and she wasn't the girl who'd had a breakdown in the chapel only months ago. She was a whole new creature entirely. There were bloodstains on her knees and stars in her eyes. Little spots and specks that weren't hers. Just another part of herself siphoned off to belong to someone else. Her entire existence, she hadn't been allowed to live for her. She existed as her mother did, to support Bronn Carter. And soon she would exist for someone else, but not before her father paraded her around the settlements like a prized horse up for auction. She stepped back from the mirror with a disgusted growl and fell into the rhythm of the song, dancing faster and harder and faster and harder until her ankle gave way. She crawled into the corner of the room and curled into a ball, hugging the shadows around herself as she viciously fought back tears. She should have been surprised when Theodore appeared in the doorway to the practice room, but the only thought that occurred to her was that they had switched places. She was the one huddled in the shadows, and he was the one cautiously approaching her. Her eyes had changed, and while they weren't bleeding black with ferality, she almost wished they were. Then nobody would mess with her. For the short time they allowed her to live, anyway. Theodore sat beside her without a word, his arm wrapping around her shoulders, pulling her into his chest. She rested her head there, lulled by the way his fingers dragged slowly through her hair.
"What's with you guys popping up out of nowhere and following me around?"
she grumbled against his delicious-smelling shirt, her hands twitching to rest there, to feel the beating of his heart through the material, the tempered rise and fall of his chest, to soak up some of his calm and strong energy through her palms. He ducked his head, hiding it from the cameras as his lips brushed against the shell of her ear.
"We're monitoring you."
She reared back, a full body shudder taking hold of her before she could suppress it.
"What?"
He only looked at her, his head tilted slightly. Waiting. Waiting for her to figure it out so he wouldn't have to say it.
"In case I talk," she surmised, her lips pursed. He nodded. "And you agreed to this?" she asked, her brow furrowing deeper. It was important to her, whether Theodore trusted her or not, though she tried to tell herself it wasn't. Nobody ever trusted Sigmas, even the ones who believed Sigmas had no power.
"Oh, I agreed,"
Theodore said easily, his usual smile teasing at the edges of his mouth.
"But only because it means I get to follow you around and avoid my fake girlfriend."
The word fake wasn't spoken out loud, only mouthed, his head still ducked, hiding from the cameras. The laugh that trickled out of her tense body surprised her, and she felt some of that tension escaping with it.
"Come on."
Theodore jumped up, offering her his hand.
"Let's get you settled in."
"Settled in?" She let him pull her up, and they walked over to her belongings. He had taken her bag hostage before she even finished pulling her shirt over her head.
"You're crashing with me,"
he announced, walking to the door and leaving her standing there with her mouth hanging open. And then she did the thing you were never supposed to do at Ironside. She swung her gaze to the nearest camera and looked at it dead on, her eyes wide with shock.
What?
She quickly looked away, her face turning bright red as she scrambled after him.
"Someone doused your room in fake blood, Isabel."
"Isabel?" She laughed nervously. "Am I in